Michael Aubin, president of Wolfson Children's, let's begin with you. In the last week alone, there were three deaths of children at your hospital, correct?
Correct. And Melissa, it was, I unfortunately see on a routine basis any deaths that happen in the hospital. And I always look at what's the reason. We try to look for trends. And seeing three one day after another, and realizing, I hear from my staff and they tell me what's going on. And I said, this is something wrong with this. So I had our staff do a little bit more research on what was going on recently. And what we found is just in this last month, we had 25 cases of suspected child abuse and neglect. And that was all out of probably 100 before that for this year. And I said, something's up. We've got to get a message back out to the community to try to make a difference and not let this continue.
Dr. Alexander, let's talk about the Children's Emergency Center staff. You are the chief of the Division of Child Protection and Forensic Pediatrics at UF Health. What happened at Wolfson isn't happening in a vacuum. You're seeing this across the community?
We are. It is something that we see in our child protection team, which spans all the way from Daytona up to the Georgia border. And we see a lot of these cases. They don't all come to Wolfson's. They actually show up other places as well. And it's something that we see in other parts of the state. So we know nationally sexual abuse seems to be down on reported cases. We know that neglect cases have not changed, and they're the most fatal form of child abuse. Physical abuse cases are supposedly down, but the severe head trauma cases are actually up, both in Florida and nationally, almost doubled in the last 8 years or so. And that's a trend that we need to stop.
Absolutely. Dr. Benjamin Thorpe, let's talk about this for a minute. Warning signs of abuse in children. And, you know, this is just so disturbing. So let's talk about what parents, educators, what we all need to be aware of.
Thank you, Melissa. So there are many forms of child abuse that can occur. As Dr. Alexander mentioned, there's sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional, and then there's neglect. For older children, the important thing would be to notice that the children are becoming withdrawn. They start having extreme behaviors, aggression. In younger children, injuries that are not explainable by the child's developmental age, a child that can't roll over, shouldn't have rolled off of the bed. Abuse is also manifested in ears of the child that there shouldn't be injuries. They don't fall and get wheels on their backs. And injuries that have a repeated pattern, like they've been slapped or hit repeatedly by an object, will leave marks and wheels and bruises. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that we as child advocates, teachers, parents, should be looking out for.
What would you say, Michael Aubin, to people hearing this right now, and maybe they've had a hunch or a suspicion that a child they've seen in the community or at school or just somewhere, that something's not right? Very often, people are reluctant to say anything, to get involved. They don't want to be wrong. They don't want it. People can often bite their tongues, even if they have a sixth sense that there might be something amiss.
Well, you know, Melissa, there's people who have that suspicion. There is a way to check it out, and there are professionals who can do that. And, you know, fortunately, we have a child abuse hotline for suspected abuse. It's anonymous. It's 800-96-ABUSE. And if folks call that number, give the information. There are professionals who will actually take those cases down. They will follow them up. And I think that can really save a child's life.
1-800-96-ABUSE is the anonymous hotline to call if you suspect a child is being abused. Right now we're talking about a string of deaths, hospital officials say, are related to child abuse here on the First Coast. Lots of calls. We want your calls and comments. Give us a call at 549-2937. Tim in Ponte Vedra. Go ahead, Tim. Good morning.
Good morning. I was just wondering what percentage of foster parents are found to have abused their child or neglected their child. are we talking about a system that just doesn't put these kids in safe homes?
Thanks for the call, Tim. Let's talk about that. Dr. Alexander, we get this comment a lot. Well, if I report the abuse and the child's removed from the home and put into the foster care system, could they be at risk for abuse there as well?
Well, the short answer is yes. But consider that, first of all, most children don't go to foster care. Most of this is dealt with in the social service system. Certainly, it's the most serious injuries that are going to get you into that situation. If they come from an abusive situation, it's 100% abuse. Foster care has the same rate of abuse as regular care, and any of us would have, and that's about 3% per year. So it's really tragic for that poor child that comes from a 100% abusive environment, and they walk into a foster care where they hit the 3%. But most foster care is actually quite good, and it's the sad cases we hear about where the child just can't get a break.
Dr. Benjamin Thorpe, do you agree?
Absolutely. Our foster care system would be screened in terms of background checks and the families, but there is always that risk. But Dr. Alexander's right. They're moving from a 100% chance to a 3%, and that would be unfortunate odds for the child.
549-2937. What are your comments and thoughts? Let's go now out to the beaches. It's Lynn in Jacksonville Beach. Good morning, Lynn. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Yes, I was calling as a guidance counselor up until a couple of years ago. And I just want to mention one of the areas that maybe some people don't want to hear about, but is a reality, is that when Governor Scott became our governor, he almost immediately cut back on the number of personnel that were available in Tallahassee to take calls on abuse. And so it went often, it went from one to two people to one person. And when you have a child at school and they've come to share, you know, a very personal kind of situation that's going on at home, they need to know that before they leave that day, something, you know, someone will be there to help them. The problem over and over again was that the person in Tallahassee, when they did get a chance to speak about this and arrange it, had to call someone in the local area in Duval County to come to the school to interview the child and then go from there. It's been very, very, very difficult when you see children having these problems and trusting the people, the adults, and then no one follows through, because not because they're not interested, but because they've been cut back so severely. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Lynn. We're getting tweets saying much the same thing. A tweet from a listener: Florida's DCF has had a horrendous record with many child deaths. If we can't trust the protectors, who can we turn to? Dr. Alexander.
You know, there is no perfect DCF, and I think that everybody here would in the state would agree with that. In 49 other states, they're going to agree with that. And they're continually working to do better. I'm going to suggest that as much as we want to improve the DCFs of the world, maybe we need to prevent things more fundamentally in the first place. If we could prevent things so well that DCF could cut their staff in half because they didn't have the business, that's what we really need. So in the healthcare profession, we're very interested in the notion of what can we do to help families, help situations in the first place, so there never has to be a call to DCF.
Yeah, let's talk about some of that. Most commonly, you see the perpetrator is often the baby's father or the mother's boyfriend. Usually it's a young adult male, right? Substance abuse is a risk factor. Children with special needs, a colicky baby. These are some of the triggers, aren't they, Michael Aubin?
Yes, and the reality of the situation is often the young males that are involved in these situations come from backgrounds that are very challenged. They often are previously abused themselves. It's what they know, unfortunately.
And that's the difficulty. Breaking the cycle of abuse is our great societal challenge, right?
Yes, it certainly is.
Easier said than done.
Yes. From the critical care standpoint, we have a group of nurses, respiratory therapists, physicians that get very involved. Unfortunately, by the time we're involved, it's the end stage when the child, we've already missed the boat in terms of preventing the injury.
Right.
And they're now coming in with severe injuries.
And they come into your facility.
Right.
And your heart breaks when you can't save them.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we did create in the Children's Hospital is the Player Center for Child Health, and which is totally focused on our outpatient initiatives to prevent injuries. And I think one of the things that this flag has raised for me is the need for us to coordinate those agencies that are in the community that are trying to do good work. And there are a number of them that are doing good work: Healthy Families, Healthy Start, the Family Support Services. But I think it's time for us to come together collectively and renew our efforts. We come out of the Great Recession with significant reductions in funding in this area, but it's time for us to reinvest, mm-hmm. To make a difference in our society.
We'll talk about that as we continue to take your calls about the string of recent child abuse-related deaths here on the First Coast. 549-2937. As we go to Mary Catherine now in Avondale. Mary Catherine, good morning. Thanks for holding. How are you today?
Oh, fine. Thank you, Melissa and the team. My comment is it possible to have an emergency hotline number specifically for frustrated parents who are at the end of their rope in the moment, such as we would call 911 for a heart attack situation? Could we institute to be in the moment, not after? I'm at the end of my rope. Can someone please help me? And then the call could go in and someone could be dispatched to the home, or even take the child to the nearest fire station for help to prevent an incident.
Yeah, great question. That's Mary Catherine in Avondale. Thank you for that. Dr. Benjamin Thorpe.
So prevention is absolute key. Every parent, every caregiver is going to feel some frustration at some point, and the key is to recognizing when you and your child is getting into trouble. They can call 211, put your child in a safe place, dial 211, and United Way will coordinate the resources to help that family.
How quick is the response if you call? Is it as quick as 911?
It's a 24/7 available hotline.
Okay, let's go now to Bill in Clay County. Hey, Bill, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
If you work in dependency, you find out that in a lot of cases, when DCF comes in to do an interview based on child abuse, those interviews, usually the family's clear. But there's a lot of indications when they do the interviews. The housing, there's a drug use in the house, and usually sometimes that can be determined. But a lot of things happen here. But they kind of like pass the complaint, and then there'll be another interview, and sometimes it's even a third interview before the children are removed from the home. The problem is that once they are removed from the home, the parents are, in a lot of cases, drug tested, and they not only have one drug in the system, but two or three. And we know that alcohol and drugs create insanity, and coming off to alcohol and drugs create insanity. And the same person cannot deal with the issues in terms of children. So the point being that I think that DCF, when they make that initial investigation, should really try to be more aware of what's going on in the environment, interviewing both parents extensively about drug use, looking at the environment, looking at the economics, because I think it's important that we kind of nail down these issues on the first report. And even after that, when you get into situations, you can see where it's kind of like a borderline environment for that child, where you really feel uncomfortable about the situation that the child's in. But still, you know, the system is slow reacting and trying to remove the children from the home. I don't see a problem removing kids from the home until parents get straight. I mean, if parents want their kids back, then they do have a responsibility to correct their problem. But you can't use drugs and take care of kids, too. I'll take some answers. I'll see you.
Thank you for the call, Bill. Dr. Alexander?
Well, I agree. It's exactly the thing that I think that we all hope would happen. To that end, you know, the Department of Children and Family really is focusing more these days here in Florida about looking at the big picture. So not so much thinking of this in legalistic terms of, is there an allegation, is it right or wrong? And then, you know, what are we going to do in just the short term? But they're trying to take a big, broader overview. Our child protection teams in the state, the 23 that we have, we look at about 1/8 of all the cases. We look at the more serious cases and things. And that's something that we really push hard, is what's the overview here? Maybe the specific symptom they come in for isn't the whole thing. And like you said, substance abuse, other things that are going on in the family may be the issue that we really need to deal with. And foster care sometimes is, as you said, a respite, so that the parents can get their act together without having to deal with the children at the same time, and then they're more successfully able to reunite.
549-2937, lots of calls as we discuss the way hospital officials and child welfare advocates are responding after a string of deaths of children in our area that are suspected to be related to child abuse. What are your thoughts? 549-2937 is the number to join us. Autumn in Ortega. Hey, Autumn. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I heard you mention earlier about colicky babies, and I had a colic baby. And I wasn't dealing with any sort of postpartum depression. I was wondering, are there resources available? Because I know it was hard without having to deal with any kind of PPD. So I can only imagine if a woman is also going through postpartum depression, how much more difficult it would be. I was wondering if there are any resources available on the First Coast for people who are going through that.
Yeah. Autumn, thank you. That's a great question as well.
I think the best resource to start with is actually your pediatrician. I think the pediatrician is in the best position to really identify the issue. They have actually usually very good resources that can refer a mom to. And between them and their obstetrician, I think those are the best places to start.
Yeah, as she pointed out, when you're stressed with a colicky baby and maybe you are postpartum, even the most loving, dedicated mom or dad can get to their wits' end. And without good impulse control, without good parenting skills, if you didn't have good parents yourself, it can be a really poisonous mix.
Absolutely. I think that's where education is extremely important from the pediatrician's standpoint. Alert your pediatrician that you're having problems, and the pediatrician will be able to advise you to do what's safe for the child. When you feel that you're coming to your wit's end, put the baby down in a safe place and walk away. And as we said, we have that hotline number to call 211 to get assistance immediately.
And the other number that Michael Aubin mentioned, 1-800-96-ABUSE. That's an anonymous number. A tweet from Jesse Wilson, a local city council candidate who spent time in foster care. He tweets the show, "We've come a long way in Florida, especially since my time in care, but there are always improvements to be made." Joseph in Arlington. Go ahead, Joseph.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show this morning. I wanted to call because Mary in Avondale said something that I thought was really good to hear. She talked about instituting a hotline. When she said it, she meant specifically for frustrated parents, but I thought that to reinforce and expand on that idea, a hotline specifically for mental health. I'm sure this kind of thing exists already, but I just thought it was worth reinforcing. I wanted to give a call and put my comment in.
Yeah, that's an important piece of it. Thanks for pointing that out, Joseph. So, Dr. Alexander, this community has been focused heavily for the last couple of years on mental health issues that affect the population. How do you see that factoring into this problem?
Well, I think that one of the things we have to remember is a number of people that have mental health issues, not all, but number of them, it's because they also had a difficult childhood, abusive childhood, or at least challenging childhood. And so the cycle keeps repeating itself. And one of our goals, we hope, were we to get some super mental health resources, is what could we do to break that cycle, make things a little easy? And as we talked about before, how do you deal with the common problems that children do, which we label as problems, like crying, later when they're older, toilet training, things like that. Things that we know as pediatricians is normal development, but for a parent that's sleep deprived and frustrated, and particularly if they don't have anyone to turn to help out, that can build up. And our message is, don't hit the child. Don't abuse the child. Don't neglect the child. Get some help. Bring other people into this.
And let's close with that, Michael Aubin. For people that might just be tuning in, there is help available. People just need to know where to turn.
Absolutely. And there are a number of agencies that work in this field, as I said before. Healthy Families or Healthy Start is a good place if you want to get involved in a program that can help you. Clearly, the Child Abuse Hotline. If you suspect in any way that some child is being abused, it is anonymous. Call the number, 1-800-96-ABUSE. Family Support Services has a wide variety of services that are available, including some guidance on behavioral health services. And then finally, 211. If you call that number, that's the suicide hotline, but it's also a hotline that has access to many other services. And again, they have trained behavioral health people there to help you. We've got to eliminate the stigma of behavioral health in our community. It's okay to get help.
Absolutely right. And can't thank all three of you enough for joining us. We so appreciate your insights this morning. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
We were joined by Michael Aubin, president of Wolfson Children's Hospital, Dr. Randall Alexander. He's chief of the Division of Child Protection and Forensic Pediatrics at UF Health, and Dr. Solange Benjamin Thorpe. She directs the Pediatric Intensive Care Unit at UF Health.